Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday, August 4th, 2010. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. I'll repeat, 646-652-4620, or send us your email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton, SUTTON-associates.net. In his biweekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on Contrary Investors Cafe. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. We are pleased this evening to have with us, calling in, Mr. Don Meishausen. And Don is agreed to be our guest this evening, and we are honored to have him. He is mentioned in 4 books about the 60s. He helped found the current libertarian movement, is currently writing about libertarian strategy, tax revolts, Asian goddesses, and humor. He is a wealth of knowledge and a true crusader of liberty. Please call in with your questions, 646-652-4620. Other information about Don. And I tell you, I can spend the entire hour on his autobiography, on his vita, I should say. Don is a walking history and a stand-up comic writer known for using wordplay as an analysis of social problems. He writes on strategy for tax revolt and the marijuana legalization movement, as well as spirituality, as a tool for political change. I can go on. He is favorably mentioned in 4 histories about the 60s. In Brian Daugherty's book, Radicals for Capitalism, which is the history of the libertarian movement, Don has more ink than any libertarian in it that is still alive. He also has an autobiographical article in Liberty Magazine, which is called Present at the Creation. He has been politically active since the Goldwater era of 1963 and went to Ayn Rand lectures, civil rights camps, and anti-war demonstrations while in high school. Don's first claim to fame is organizing the draft card burning in 1969 Young American for Freedom Convention. That's the YAF convention. I can go on and on, which I will continue to go on. He hasn't called in yet. I got so much to read. Don founded an SDS chapter at a community college in Newark. Even pagan leaders call him a source of good ideas. He served 4 years in jail for his movement on drugs and whatever. Never snitched on anyone. Served in federal, state, and low and high security levels, prisons. When asked to talk about drugs in a prison drug education class, Don did his first stand-up comedy and killed his audience with his humor. He repeated his audiences at the Kwanzaa event and was barred for a Wiccan group and a, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce this, a skied for... And I can't pronounce that, whatever it is. I'm sorry, I'm going to mispronounce that. I'm sure I'm going to butcher it, so I won't say it. He wrote humor, libertarian strategy, fundraising ideas, songs and poetry while in prison. In prison, he was honored to have income tax rebel Erwin Schiff as a friend and fellow inmate. Folks, we talk about people who are freedom lovers. I'll take myself as an example. This is what I do. I talk about it. I do not hold a candle to this gentleman. This felt, though, you know, you hear the expression, walk the walk, talk the talk, and all that other good stuff. This guy is absolutely unbelievable what he has done. I recall when I was young in and the SDS movement was was active and came to prominence, I should say. I thought they were terrible people. I mean, this is horrible stuff. And so, you know, I thought they were the scourge of mankind and the whole bit. And as I got older, I realized that these people really had their act together, and I was the one that really needed reevaluation. But he did it when it was not cool to do it. See, what I'm doing here is I'm doing things that are cool to do now. And there's a difference. Now, he hasn't called in yet. I'm going to call on his cell phone and see if I can reach him. I do hope he calls in any second and he beats me to the punch. Just hold on one second, folks. I'm ringy-dinging him now, and let's see if I can get him on the line. I hope he didn't forget us. I just spoke with him the other day. Just hold on, folks. Don't go away. His phone is not answering. I'll bet we have a mix-up on time. We have different time zones. And he was to call in 8 o'clock his time, 7 o'clock my time. And I'm just wondering if I got that confused or I confused him. Well, I'm not getting an answer. Neither has he called in. We do have a problem, folks. I'll make it ring two more times and then we'll take it from there. I'm sorry. I know you don't like to just listen to me jabber. Well, that did not work. Let's see. 351-1550. Okay, well, folks, I guess somehow we lost Don as a guest. I'm very disappointed. I did hope... I actually don't know what happened. We do have one full hour to kill. And heck, I don't mind ranting for a while. In fact, that's, I think, what I'll do until maybe, hopefully, he'll call in. You know, we talk about liberty, and we know not what we talk about. We talk about liberty, but at the same time, what do? We put restrictions on that word. We say, oh, yes, I'm for liberty, you know, provided the government approves it or have a registered card or, you know, or there's legislation up. We don't understand, and it's very difficult for people to understand, that we are free people. In effect, people should be anarchist. And I know this sounds like a bad word. We are all anarchist, provided that we do not infringe on the equal rights of others. In other words, we can do what we want, provided we do not infringe on the equal rights of others. And we don't break contracts. For example, in my subdivision where I live, I agreed when I came in here that there were certain things that I would abide by. I wouldn't put up a 20-foot fence, you know, things like that. I wouldn't park my car, you know, on the front lawn and all this other good stuff. And I wouldn't have jalopies in the driveway on stilts, you know, fixing them all day long. I mean, there's certain conventions that you can... Now, it's not that, well, I can do it, man. I'm a libertarian. I'm free. I can do whatever I want. No, I agreed to those terms when I moved in. And I think people really confuse what freedom and commitment is. Now, if you did not want to abide by those rules, you'd have to go to another area and live where they allow you to park your car, you know, on the front lawn, where you could put up a 10-foot fence and all this other good stuff. In other words, there are what is called deed restrictions where I live. And I had access to those deed restrictions when I moved in. Now, if I didn't like them, say, you know, I don't like these deed restrictions, I had two choices. Three choices. I can either abide by them, I can either try to change them before I moved in so they would be more to my liking, provided everyone else agreed, or I can move someplace else. In other words, I was free to make one of those three decisions. So being free to do what you want, and call it anarchist, I don't care what you want to call it. Call it being a libertarian. Call it classical liberal, or a liberal. I don't care what you call it. But there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, provided that you abide by the rules and regulations that you agree to. Now, once someone places rules and regulations on you because they want to control your actions and your behavior, and they want to profit by it, that doesn't count. I'm not talking about that at all. And I think we confuse those two. So we have a government doing things, and we say, hell, you know, well, the government said I can't do that. Well, hell's bells. Read the Constitution. The intent of the Constitution is that we are free people, and it is a government for, of, and by the people. We lose that concept. We do not know what that concept is. And the reason why we do not understand that concept is because we have been herded into, and I use the word herded very deliberately, into government schools. And in going into government schools, we learn what the rules and regulations are and how important government is. In other words, it's an indoctrination process. When we get out of school, we really don't know much, but we know we can't do much because the government, you know, got to give us permission first. That's basically what we leave school understanding. And then when someone says, no, you're a free person. What are you, an anarchist, man? You know, and we revert to that. You know, it is so interesting how we cannot get to truly know ourselves and what we can do. Because we really believe that there's someone else out there, you know, who is controlling our destiny, who has a say as to what we do, how much we do of it, and when we do it. We also what it is. Now, does that mean I can go out in the middle of the street and start shooting my gun at people? No, absolutely not. Remember, I'm talking about without infringing on the equal rights of others, you can do what you want. If you sign a contract and you agree to something, you should honor that contract. Now, when you're born, you don't sign a contract with the government. The government says, all right, you want to be born. And this is a very important point. If you want to be a true conservative, this is what a true conservative is. When you are born and you're a baby and you can't read, right? You have to someone has to sign a contract for you and saying, I will abide by all the rules and regulations of the government, and I will only be as free as the government allows me to be free. And then they put your baby foot on a stamp pad, and they stamp the paper. They say, fine, you agree to it, now you have to abide by it. No, we don't do that. Well, they'll say, all right, now that you're 10 years old and you can understand this contract, or pick any age, you have to sign this contract. So with the government, allowing the government to give you permission to do only what it wants you to do. Now, if you don't sign that contract, you can do whatever you want to do according to our Constitution. And I shouldn't say according to our Constitution. I should say according to natural law. There's no natural law that says there is an individual floating around somewhere who will somehow eventually attain the status of premier or president or divine ruler or whatever you want to call it. And that person has the wherewithal to determine whether or not what you can do. I mean, what I'm saying sounds stupid, but that's what we in fact do. And until we realize it, we will never be free. In fact, if you look at it, we are really not free people because we don't allow ourselves to be free. Now, we all have friends that want to do something. They talk about doing something. They can do it. And yet, it could be going in business. It could be doing something, you know, going on vacation somewhere, and they don't do it. And why? Because they don't allow themselves to do it. We do not allow ourselves to be free. We say, yes, we want to be a free nation, and then we vote Republican or Democrat. We vote Republican or Democrat because we were told in school that it is our obligation to vote, is our duty to vote as a citizen. And what I'm saying is that, no. Our duty is to elect to vote or not. To dissent. It's the right of dissent. If we don't vote, it's because we're sick and tired and disgusted. And as far as I'm concerned, if 75% of the people don't wind up to vote, no one gets in office. We have blank slate. We have nobody there. Because no one is interested in people voting. I'd love to see something like that happen. Now, this Tea Party revolt is kind of interesting. I think it's a little sad in a way because it's been hijacked, as they say, by the neocons. And that bothers me. But at least people are actually upset and doing something. Now, folks, it's about 17 minutes past the hour of 7. My name is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. We do invite you to call with any comments. It's going to be open mic night, I guess. 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. And you can send me comments at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Now, we were supposed to have Don Meinshausen in, but I'm just wondering if we got our dates or times, you know, mixed up somehow, because he hasn't called in. He's very reliable. And I almost feel like I'm to blame because I must have said something subconsciously that was incorrect. And now he's not on the pipe now. And he was going to be one interesting guest. And I just feel very badly about that. And it is most likely my fault. I hope it's not my fault. I'll be honest. I just hope it's not my fault. But it sure seems that way. So I shall continue. I wish at this time that someone would call and pose a question to me and let us discuss it. 646-652-4620. You know, a big problem that we have is that our president is involved in every issue, every whether it be abortion, whether it be war, whether it be immigration, whether it be gay, the president, nothing to do with any of this. I want you to dream with me a little bit. Just dream a bit. Let's assume for a second that we were the nation's strongest military power, as we are today. But we took a different stance. We kept everything at home. In other words, if anyone tried to touch us, we would be so... And if we did bring everything at home and we consolidated all our resources and we spent our money on research and development and furthering, you know, being the top-notch technological army and whatever, which we are, but even more so because we'll have more time and energy to do that because we're not all over the place and all the money's being spent there is still at home. If we were at home and we had no aircraft carriers floating around with a dozen support ships or half dozen support ships, how many there are to supporting each one, that's thousands and thousands of sailors. For me, 5,000 sailors sometimes, you know, just supporting an aircraft carrier. You know, and the airplanes flying on and off there and the fuel that's used and the expense, it's phenomenal. But we brought everybody home. And we became the most peace-loving nation on earth. If one country invaded another country, not our problem. It isn't our problem, you know, just, you know, go to it, go break a leg, what do we care? We did not give any country foreign aid. No one got foreign aid from us. But we did trade with them. But we were able to trade with those countries on an individual basis, not government by government. In other words, none of this government does this government, and they sneak behind the table, they do this and that, and then they arm the rebels. None of that. You know, I want to buy something. This country makes the best. I go over there, say, I want to buy this from you, send them a check. The check clears. They send me the stuff. They're happy. I'm happy. No war. Just think, if we did that, would there in fact be any need for terrorism? Would people around the world say, United States, they're really nice people. You know, we do a lot of work with them. They help everyone. They're really peace-loving people. They're free people. We really admire them. Let's kill them! That wouldn't make any sense, would it? All right, we have someone online. Caller 918, you're on the air.
Jim from Bixby here.
Jim from Bixby. I know who you are, Jim. Thank you for calling in. Jim, I'm sorry. Don has not called in. I may have just screwed things up somehow all the time. I hope it's not my fault, because I'll feel very guilty
about
that.
I'm sure he'll connect with you, and you guys will figure it out and get him rescheduled.
I do hope so.
But while you're talking about our military debacles and direction that our government is going with all of our the imperial adventures and wars, I'm hearing more and more even this week about the drumbeat of war in Iran, and that Israel and or U.S. may be bombing them here in the next whether it be a couple weeks or a few months, but sounds like it's imminent. And just wondered what you think of the ramifications of that. And then I have if we have time or interest, I have another question on an unrelated topic. But since you're talking our military, with the threat or impending possibility of that event, what do you think is the—
Well, you know, Jim, I can forecast the future with uncanny accuracy, and I know everything. You know that. And I've never been wrong in my life. You understand that. As long as you understand that, then I can answer the question. You know, that's a real tough one. The reason why it's so difficult is that our foreign policy reminds me of, you ever go to an old house, a real old house, someone selling an old house, and they clean everything out, but they leave those little wire coat hangers in the closet, and there's like 50 of them, and they're all sort of touching each other and tangled, and you try to get one off, but when you get one off, all 50 come off the, off the hook, you know, the thing. In other words, our foreign policy reminds me of the entangled coat hangers. You can't make any sense out of it. They don't know why they don't throw the stupid thing away. They don't fix it, separate it, or whatever. But they're always tangled. You can never use any of them because they're all screwed up. Our foreign policy is that way. You know, we're trying to make goody-goody with Russia and trying to make amends with them and be a trading partner with them. And then we do militaristic things that we know are gonna aggravate the bejesus out of them. I mean, it's understood. It's not by accident. Now, Russia's concerned about Iran in a way, probably for different reasons than we are. You know, and yet they will probably wind up supporting Iran if we attack them. What do we accomplish? I mean, I don't understand what we're going to accomplish. There are those who say the reason why we're going to bomb Iran is because we're overly influenced by the Jewish state. And now there's a lot of people who get angry when someone even mentions that. But, you know, you got to get that gut feeling that say, you know, there's probably an element of truth to that. And if that's the case, and I'm going to say it is the case, if that's the case, are we not then fulfilling the objectives of another country that has nothing to do with us whatsoever? A country that we say, we have special...
Obviously, our ties and military support and funding of Israel is not the theory or conspiracies. It's very well documented.
Our ties. And why? I have no idea. I mean, Israel. They want to live there. They want to live in an Arab state of Palestine and create their own country. Go to it, you know. But if they come over there and they throw you out, don't call me. I mean, you know, it's like I've come to your house. Hey, by the way, Jim, I'm taking over your living room and your den, you know, and part of your kitchen. So you'll have to move. Well, I could do that, but you could punch me in the nose and throw me out, you know.
And I did set you up because I know that that not only is so hypothetical and so many. It could be Armageddon, World War III.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or it could be a 6-day war that you know, ends peacefully. Who knows?
I don't think it'll end peacefully. But if you invest in oil, it would be fabulous to invest in oil just the day before they attack.
Well, you read my mind. It was one of the articles about the coming war was from an investment guru and. Yeah, I mean, he said it's hard to argue that Iran could shut down up to 20% of the world's oil production.
Yeah, and here's the beauty of that is that we stopped dropping bombs on Iran, right? From my point of view, no reason whatsoever. The price of oil, you know, goes from let's say $3 a gallon to $6 a gallon. And then everyone says, oh, oil companies, we have to do something about the oil companies. They're making obscene profits and this and that. And then we have controls. Then the government starts taking over the oil companies or puts price controls on the oil companies because of the obscene profits. You know, it's just that it becomes this entangled web of these little coat hangers in this closet that you can never untangle. And the government should just get out of the whole damn thing, Jim, just out of everything.
They still have a moratorium on offshore drilling. It was just an impulse reaction to the spill.
Yeah.
To say, oh, we're going to ban any of this type of activity for 6 months, and obviously this was a very isolated mishap and tragedy, and to shut down you know those other business operations and those I mean you're talking you know impacting. Potentially tens of millions of dollars for each of those rigs or companies, and so it's just out of hand. But I'd be interested to know, I've been reading about this proposed mosque near the site of Ground Zero, and whether or not you believe the you know official 9/11 story or think it's a big lie, and which would suggest that it was not a Muslim jihadist origin. Of the attack,
yeah.
But regardless of your position on that, I almost think it's kind of comical and funny in some ways, very ironic. And but I just wonder how I haven't read as to how someone even proposed it and got it funded, and what the new developments are. But I wondered what your thoughts are of a mosque being built at the site of Ground Zero.
You know,
I'm gonna hang up and continue,
okay.
But listen to your response,
all
and
right.
I'll always enjoy your banter, Joe.
Okay, thanks, Jim, for calling. I certainly appreciate
right.
it. Bye.
Talk to you later. Bye. Right,
thank you. You know, I'm glad Jim brought up the question about the mosque. There's a lot I don't know. I don't know if the land is private land, if it's land owned by the city. But I have no idea. The thing is, I don't know the details. But let's assume that anyone has a right to buy that land, and if they buy that land, they can build what they want. They can build a mosque. Now, there are those who contend, and they may be right, that Islam is a religion which brutalizes women and children or whatever they do, and that we don't want that here, and that we are giving permission. Well, see, I have a problem with all of this, because if, in fact, that's the case, and that's the case that says, well, no, we're not going to let you build it when there because you are basically an illegitimate religion. You're not really a religion. You kill people. You know, you treat women like worse than slaves. And we here in America don't agree with the tenets of your religion. Well, if that's true and that's the case, then we would have to ask every mosque in the United States to close and move outside of the jurisdiction of the United States. And this is where I say we become so entangled and so screwed up. If there's a mosque in upstate New York, if there's a mosque in the Bronx, which I'm sure there is, if it's okay for it to be in the Bronx, what difference does it make if there's one in Ground Zero? Proximity to Ground Zero should be absolutely no criteria for building a mosque. Now, it from a public relations point of view, from the Islamic group, is it smart? No, I don't think so. But that has nothing to do with it. If it's an illegitimate religion, if it thrives on killing and maiming other people, then it should not be given free tax status. It should not be rigid. We should not allow mosque anywhere. Why would the mosque in the Bronx be allowed to stay open if it is of the same religion as that? So, you know, we are so disingenuous. We never do anything right. We never do anything right. I tell you, we always got to do everything is, it's not black and white. It's green and orange and it's gray. No, things are going to be black and white. If you allow it everywhere, if there are 10,000 mosques in the United States and this land is eligible to be bought and these people bought it and they want to build a mosque, they can build a mosque. Its proximity to Ground Zero is not a criteria of whether or not it can be built. This is a free country. Now, understand this. I think Ron Paul hit the nail right on the head, but no one will ever repeat this because no one wants to hear Ron Paul. And he said something along the lines, and I'll paraphrase, is it possible that terrorism exists or terrorist acts exist because of our unwelcomed presence, military presence in the Middle East? Very simple question. No one wants to answer the question. What do you mean? Well, we got to be there. We got to protect our oil. We got to protect those people. Blah, 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 you know. No. What if our presence in the Middle East, our military bases on what they consider sacred ground, is the instigator? Now, these people are relatively poor. The populace is poor. They're religious people and religious fanatics there, just like we have religious people here, religious fanatics here. No difference. We're no different. They can't fight back. They don't have F-14s and crap like that. So they do what they can do. They tie a bomb to themselves and they walk into a building. You know, to me, it's so clear. We frustrate people, not only the Arabs, but people all over the world, all different types of people, to a point where they know they can't fight back. They're not strong enough to fight back. But they can surely inflict a lot of pain. Now, Jim asked me if I believed that, I think he asked me if the government was involved in the 9/11. Let me answer it this way. First of all, folks, my name is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Please call in with your questions, 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Now, here it is. What we hear, what we read in our history books, and what we learn in government schools, we learn that the attack on Pearl Harbor was a surprise. And if you suggest otherwise, people get angry. They won't discuss it because they get so angry they can't discuss it. Let's walk through this. In 1940, 1941, the world was at war. The whole world was at war, save maybe Chile and maybe Argentina or something like that. But then maybe even Australia was, I think, got involved. But the world was at war. Think about that. The world was at war. There was campaigns in Northern Africa. There were campaigns going on in the Middle East. The Germans were pushing into Russia. All of Eastern Europe had fallen. Western Europe had fallen. Britain was a basket case. The Japanese had brutalized the people in Indonesia, the Philippines, and in China. That whole section was at war. Now, we were a country that was going to remain neutral during World War II. Right? Now, we have a military base. The closest military base to Japan was in Pearl Harbor. Now, just think about this. The world is at war. What we are doing is that we are supplying and giving aid to the enemy of Japan. We've stopped providing any fuel supplies and urged the Dutch and the British, everybody, the Dutch and others, to stop supplying fuel to the Japanese. We were starving the Japanese military. I can't blame them, actually. But, you know, they said, no, we're not going to give you, we're going to block any supplies of fuel. The Japanese were becoming desperate. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent. This is a fact, right? We were having merchant ships sunk every day out in the mid-Atlantic. The German U-boats, they just kept on, you know, knocking them off because we were supplying, you know, Britain and the other Allied forces. So we weren't really neutral. We just didn't happen to have troops on the ground. But we were supporting the enemies of Japan and the enemies of the Third Reich and also the enemies in the early part of the war of Mussolini, of the Italian army. Now, there's the scene. What position would you take in Pearl Harbor? If you were a commander-in-chief in Pearl Harbor, would you say, guys, relax, let's play wiffle ball and picnic and just lie around the beach all day and park our ships and keep... You know? Of course you wouldn't. The world is at war. The world is at war. What's going to happen? You got to be on guard 24 hours a day. But what we did is we intentionally took our guard down, knowing the Japanese were going to attack sooner or later. They knew that. They interpreted. They had interceptions. And this is all government stuff. These are government documents. We instigated Japan to do something. But let's say we really didn't want them to attack us. We just wanted to you know, starve them out so they'd stop fighting. Let's just assume we were the good guys, which we weren't. But let's assume that for a second. Wouldn't it be natural for you to be on somewhat guard, have some planes every once in a while in the air to check to see if anyone's invading the place? Would you not have your ships out from the dock to, you know, in the event someone was coming in, you'd be all ready to go? But no, everyone's sitting around like it's a sunny day in July and we're all having a picnic. But one thing that very few people do know, all of the newer ships, sort of the World War II ships, they were all sent out to sea. All the older ships from World War I, they were all parked. Isn't that interesting? Those are the ones that sunk. So we say the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. Folks, if it was a surprise, we have the most inept military in the world. We got the dumbest people in the world running our military. Understand that. If it was a surprise, we got the dumbest bastards in the world running our military. Which means we probably still do. Which I think we do. Now, what does this have to do with 9/11? Well, people say, how could you accuse the United States of being any way whatsoever, even one half of 1% complicit in the falling of the Trade Center towers and the hijacking of the airplanes. How could you? I mean, doing so, you should be jailed and shot. You're a traitor to this country if you did that. And that's what people said when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. People said, we knew it. And anyone who said that was a traitor to the United States. And now what do we know? What do we know for a fact? And folks, you can look this up, government documents. We knew. We very well knew. We knew everything. We allowed it to happen. You read books, the documentary books, the actual documents from the government, not somebody's opinion, the documents from the government will prove that to be the case. And it has. These books have been written on that. But now we can talk about it because it was 60 years ago. It sort of faded away. But if you wrote this book 6 months afterwards, they would have shot you. They wouldn't have printed it. You would have been a traitor to the United States. My point being is that anyone who says, well, maybe the United States was somewhat complicit by even 0.1%, you're a traitor. We could not have known. We could not have had anything to do with this. How dare you say that? And yet, every single war that we were involved in were all false flags. And we all had something to do with it. Everyone. Everyone. Vietnam. The Gulf of Tonkin incident. What a joke. Now we found out that was a joke. Documented joke. Documented. It's a joke. It's documented. So when Jim says, you know, regardless of my feelings on who was responsible for 9/11, the government has a history. A perfect scorecard. They're batting 1,000 in being involved in every single conflict that we were involved in. They had something to do with it in that they either lied or they instigated it or told us whatever happened never did happen and should never have, and we should never have attacked that country. And I'm going back to the War of 1812. Every single one. So people say, you think the government had anything to do with it? Well, I said, well, when you hire a person, do you say, let me see your resume? Right, you want to see what the person has done before. You call the people where he worked before, see if he was a good person. If you call five other people, the guy says, that guy's a bum. He's a real bum. We fired the bum. Let's assume you call five people, yeah, you're a bum. He's a bum, right? You say, well, you know, I think I'll hire him anyway. No, if he was a bum with the past five employers, he's going to be a bum with you. And all I'm saying is that since we have no track record of being honest, none. Zero. How could I accept the government line on 9/11? How could I? Can't. The government has a track history of lying every single time. Now, I don't know what happened. I'll be honest with you. I really don't know what happened. And I can't be specific. All I'm saying is that if they always lied, I'm assuming they're lying again. So somehow they're not perfectly clean. So now the entanglement of hangars gets even worse. So we have this entanglement of hangars in that we say they can't build a mosque on the 9/11 sacred ground. And then you say, well, did the United States have anything to do with that? You get queasy. I'm not saying they did. You get queasy because they have no track record, zero track record of being clean. They have always done it dirty. Always. So you have to dismiss that. And then you say, well, won't they agitate it worse? I say, listen, you know what? Look, let them build a mosque, right? If they build a mosque and they're really that bad, wouldn't you get a religious fanatic of another religion? And I'm not even saying what religion. Any religion. I'll make one up. The Bokenist religion. That's a phony religion. I just made it up. Wouldn't you get a Bokenist, you know, fanatical Bokenist, to tie a bombs around him and go disguise himself as a Muslim, go in for Muslim prayer and blow the place up? Why not? They do it. If you claim that they do it, why can't we do it? Is that beneath us? Of course not. So why don't we start being honest with ourselves? Just be honest. If, in fact, Islam is that bad, is that bad of a religion, and doesn't deserve, is not allowed to build a spot, then it should be outlawed in the United States. Then they're all criminals, and they should all be deported. Every one of them. But you can't say, well, you can have a mosque in the Bronx, you can have one in Jersey, but you can't have one in Maryland, and you can't have one in New York City. How do you do that? And then we debate it. We debate it because we never get down to the core issue, because the core issue is what is so uncomfortable to us. The core issue is who's responsible. We don't want to go there. We don't want to answer Ron Paul's statement. Is it possible that terrorism is a result of the unwelcomed meddling, of our unwelcome meddling in the Middle East? We don't want to answer that question. Truthfully.
Oh, we'll say, well, of course we have to. It's national security, and of course we have oil supplies that we have to protect. And there's a reason for us to be there. You can imagine the world without us being there, and we spend lots of money, and I'm sure they appreciate it. Blah, blah, blah.
All this crap. We cannot be honest. We're never honest. The one reason why I listen to Don Imus in the morning, not for political commentary or anything like that, is that Don Imus is honest. And he says that. He says, I'm the only honest person on television. I agree with him. Someone does something, he goes, that's stupid. What did you do that for? That's the dumbest thing I ever saw.
So it's like, well, thank you, Jim. I think that's wonderful.
He goes, you're a kook. But they all talk that way. They're all honest with one another. And they all love each other. I love that. I just love that. I absolutely love that. Don Imus is the number one radio talk show host in the world. Second one is Howard Stern. All the rest are garbage. Why Howard Stern? Because Howard Stern's honest. I know a lot of people say, well, you know, you got to be demented. He's crazy. You know, he's crude. He's honest. You don't have to listen to him. He's honest. We cannot be honest. And when people talk about 9/11, we cannot be honest. When we talk about the mosque at 9/11, at the Ground Zero, we cannot be honest with ourselves. Because we do not want to face our own frailties, our own faults. We don't want to face the fact that we may have been wrong. That we may have been duped, that what we believe in is wrong. Because we believe it, we do not want to know the facts. Because once we know the facts, we don't believe. We will know. And we don't want to know. Because if we knew, we would violate our belief systems and people would start getting like me, angry. And people should be angry. Jim, I hope that answers your question. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We were to have Don Meinshausen as our guest. Something happened. I am going to assume it was my fault. I may have given him the wrong hour or the wrong day. But we're going to have him back. Something may have, and if something happened, we're going to have him back. Even if it's his fault, I'm not angry. Believe me, I'm only disappointed because he would have been a fabulous guest. And I will somehow contact him and find out what the problem is and have him on as soon as I can. We are booked for the next 4 or 5 weeks that we have guests. So it seems that if we do have him, we'll have him sometime in September. Well, boy, I just about shot my wad on that one. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. Oh, I do have news in that we are now posted on iTunes. Go to Liberty Radio, Liberty Talk Radio, and we'll pop up. And you can download everything via iTunes now. That's a big one. And my son did that. He did a great job, and I thank him for it. And I'm going to do something for him that's really nice. I don't know what it is yet. But anyway, we're going to do something for him. I really don't know. It's 10 minutes to the hour thus far. And I don't know if there are any other subjects that I can bring up at this time, and explore it. Here we go. We do have a telephone caller. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, Joe. This is Adam from Atlanta.
Adam, how you doing, Adam? Thank you so much for calling in. I'm going sore, and I was hoping someone would call in so they'd give me a break. What's happening, man?
Well, I'll try to do my best, Joe.
Okay. By the way, we only have about 7 minutes, so I just want to let you know that we're under some time restraint. But go ahead.
I understand, and I'm sorry about your guest. I did want to ask Mr. Meinthausen, but I will ask you in his place. I wanted him to comment, since he's an authority on the political movements of the 1960s, but I'll ask you to comment on the counterculture movement of the 1960s from a libertarian standpoint. Now, I'm a constitutionalist libertarian myself. The mistake that the anti-war movement made in the 1960s, in my view, was aligning themselves with communism instead of the free market. They had everything else right, except they aligned themselves with the communist movement. Now, the youth of the 1960s may not have been politically sophisticated enough to have done this, but today's youth culture is, and I think proof of it is how many of them are part of Ron Paul's liberty movement.
Right.
And I wanted you to comment on that.
Well, I am going to plead absolute total ignorance. When I was at that age back in the 60s, I had no feel for anything. I mean, when I was in Harlem, I sang doo-wop on the streets, you know. Then I got married, I had kids, I was looking for a job. I mean, this stuff was so foreign to me. When I heard about the SDS, I thought they were the most horrible people in the world. I was afraid to walk into a building thinking that the building was going to blow up. I mean, I wasn't mindful of that. They were bad. I was told they were bad people. Guess what? They were bad people. My parents were voted Republican, so I thought I was a Republican. Didn't know why, you know. So I have, you know, I'm embarrassed to say that I have no opinion on that. Now that I'm the age I am, I think, go, girl, go. I mean, you know, everything they did was correct. You know, of course, even people who, I even signed up to go to Vietnam, would you believe it? And the thing is, I didn't pass, you know, because I didn't pass the physical, because I had an incident when I was very young, and that came up, and they said, sorry, and I haven't had a reoccurrence for, you know, 50 years, but they said, sorry, you can't do that. I said, well, why'd that stop you? So, I mean, I was stupid enough to actually try to join the Marines to go to Vietnam. Would you believe that? But, I mean, my mind wasn't there. I have friends that went to Vietnam, and today when they talk about it, they go, the dumbest thing I ever did in my life, and I was lucky to come back alive. That's the only thing I was lucky, you know? Dumb. And they think back, and they go, where was my brains? And I said, where were my brains back then? I had none. Zero brains. But go ahead, Mark. Adam, I'm sorry, Adam.
Could you, and I understand that you weren't very politically motivated back then, but could you imagine what would have taken place if the counterculture movement of the 1960s had been libertarian-based instead of socialist-communist-based?
Yeah. I see where you come from. Yeah. I don't think it would have made hella beans. I don't think it would have been any different whatsoever. That's my only gut feeling. And the reason why I say that is because people don't look at it that way. We're looking at it, almost analyzing it, and trying to find the virtue in what is going on. People just take everything on the surface, and they would have taken it on the surface, and the reason for me, that the ideology meant nothing. means nothing. And I don't think that, I'm saying unfortunately, I don't think it would have made an iota of difference. None. People said, libertarian, what's that? In fact, there's a gal here in Tulsa who's running as a libertarian. Of course, we don't have a libertarian party because it's to be a libertarian here in Tulsa in Oklahoma, you got to get like 4 million signatures, and you can't do it. They don't allow it. So she's running as an independent, but she's a libertarian, and she's asking me to mentor her through this her campaign, and she's doing pretty well so far. And I said, whenever you get up and speak, never ever mention the fact that you're a libertarian. Don't even utter the word. She says, why not? I'm a libertarian. I said, people will not understand that. They hear libertarian, they'll understand. They hear communist, kook, gay rights. They will not hear what you're saying. Just say you're independent and your philosophy is that I can run my life a hell of a lot better than some bureaucrat in Washington. If you feel that way, vote for me. Forget the labels. And I think that's the same premise that I'm coming from.
Well, I understand your concern, but I think that you'd also agree that things are changing now. A libertarian is not a four-letter word as it used to be.
Oh, no, no. Of course, it's got more prominence. There are more people looking at it. People are becoming more curious about it. If I ran as a libertarian candidate today and it was a libertarian party, I would do today infinitely better than I did back in the 2000 when I ran in the 2000 election, of which I only got 2-3%. And I put much money in my campaign. I just did it because I felt compelled to. And I agree. There is, and the internet has helped that. The internet has made people a little bit more skeptical of the status quo, of the neocon movement. But even the neocons are becoming almost fanatical in their own right, because now the Republican Party has the neocon element, which is very big and very strong and very active, especially with this Sarah Palin girl that's a bastard
right.
case. They have her to hitch their star onto, and I think that's a big mistake, a real big mistake.
I know you only got a few minutes, so I appreciate you letting me come on and ask my question, and have a good rest of the evening.
Okay, Adam, thank you so much for calling. I certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much for your listenership.
Thank you.
Well, folks, guess what? That's it. This is the end of tonight's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, don't steal, please. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.